Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hi there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. On the show with me today, I have Barbara Jaffe, and we're going to talk about the healing power of working through our old childhood wounds. We all have a wounded child living in us that needs help, and Barbara's version of this is called the replacement child. These are children who are conceived with a very conscious purpose of replacing another child who passed away or was lost to the parents in some way. This creates replacement child syndrome, and according to Barbara, it creates a particular kind of feeling of not feeling worthy, as if you weren't born with the right to be yourself, but rather to replace somebody else. In my own work with my own clients, I really believe deeply in the healing potential of doing inner child work. It's one of my favorite things to do with my clients. One of my friends who's a therapist jokingly said once, "The answer is your inner child." She says that whenever anybody asks a question about whatever's wrong with anybody, the answer is your inner child. And I think on some level, this can actually be sort of true. And we all have a unique childhood. So I think we're all kind of wounded in our own unique way, our own unique and charming way. But I barely ever meet people who seem to have sailed through their childhood without taking a hit in some department or another. And I believe so strongly that our childhood traumas need to be worked through so that we can be free of the pain and anxiety that those unhealed parts of us hold. When we have trauma in our childhood, the child parts of us gets frozen back at that age. And even though our bodies and our psyches sort of move forward in time, that frozen part of us like sticks in the trauma and doesn't progress and really holds the energy of the pain and trauma from that whatever happened. So the good thing about doing inner child work and what I love to do with my clients is to free up and release the stuck energy of that trauma. It allows us to kind of, you know, to let that go and fully reach our potential and be happy, healthy, you know, in the present moment. And the child part of us holds so much power. It's like, I think it's like one of the most poignant and powerful parts of who we are. It's fun, playful, spontaneous, creative, silly, and it's the part of us that just enjoys being in the moment. So it's not just some like crazy, disturbed part of you that needs healing. It's also this incredibly special part of us. And I'm so excited to talk to Barbara Jaffe today. She's the author of the book, When Will I Be Good Enough? And let's start the conversation. So welcome, Barbara.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for having me on your show.
Thanks for being here. And like I said in my intro, I just love this topic. It's one of my favorite topics.
Yes, it is something that's near and dear. As a replacement child myself, I've come through this journey with a lot of healing and inner work.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what a replacement child is? I'd never actually heard that term until I looked at your book.
Yes, and actually I had originally titled my book Replacement Child, and that's the subsequent part of my child, a replacement child's journey to healing. But I never necessarily saw myself as a replacement child, but I always felt that I was kind of second best. And there's actually a replacement child syndrome. So as you said, it's a child born to replace another child intentionally. And there are many qualities that a replacement child has, but they're actually very similar to so many of us. That the idea of a survivor's guilt. My mother would often say, if your brother had lived, you wouldn't have been born. My brother before me was about 2 years old and died, and then I was born to replace him. I had the perfectionist feeling that I needed to be perfect, and most important, I needed to make my mother happy because I sensed at a very early age that she was very sad, and of course, she never was able to healthily grieve my brother's loss. And the doctor paid her a visit when she was in the depth of her grief. Not that anyone can truly recover from a child's loss, but there are ways in which to deal a little bit more healthily. And in those days, the idea of talking about it or therapy wasn't really the focus. And so he literally slapped her across the face and said, you need to move on and have another. So she got pregnant soon after that. And I don't think, of course, healthily grieved. And so there I was. So with many of the qualities that a replacement child has, it's also very similar to children perhaps that have been affected by any kind of addiction or a detached parent, a depressed parent, an abusive parent, maybe in an environment where any sibling is compared to somebody else. And those are the qualities that I grew up with, that anxiety, feeling less than in so many areas of my life.
Right. It's so sad. I mean, I'm sure your mother didn't intend to, you know, make you feel unworthy or less than. And it's such a sad story all the way around. It's sad that, you know, that your brother died and she had that loss, and that it's sad that she was slapped in the face. I mean, that is horrifying.
Right.
It's horrifying to me. And of course, I knew you were going to say somebody told her to have another child, that that's kind of was the cure. I'm sure that's what people were told to do, right?
Exactly. I mean, even when someone loses a pet, a dear pet, you know, some people say that, but we all know that we need time to grieve the loss of that pet. And, you know, this is a child. So absolutely. My mother loved me. I know that she loved me, absolutely, and she did the best she could. But her love was often conditional, depending on what kind of good little girl I was. And my brother had kind of had a different experience. First of all, even though he was almost 7 years old when I was born, and he didn't remember the loss of his younger brother, but it was just a different environment for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in the shadow, actually, of two brothers.
And you said in your book that, you know, you felt like you were the wrong gender, too, and that had a big part in what was wrong about you, right?
Yes, I got a mixed message. On one hand, my mother said she was happy to have a girl after two sons, but she generally favored boys. And ironically, I ended up with three sons, whom are, they're wonderful men, and she was wonderful to them. She was able to be totally present as a grandmother in ways that she couldn't quite be as my mother.
That's interesting. I hear that a lot, actually, and experienced it in my life with my grandmother, who is a fabulous grandmother, and I think she was probably a really difficult mother. I think that happens. So you really kind of came out of that experience feeling like there was something really fundamentally wrong with you, right?
I sensed that I was almost like swimming uphill, you know, like a salmon swimming upstream. And on the outside looking in, I looked fine, and everybody thought that I was totally together. But on the inside, I knew that pieces were missing. So I was on a journey to understand why things seem so much harder for me than others. I just sensed that at an early age.
How did that impact you, do you think?
I think it impacted me greatly that I grew up to be an extreme people pleaser. And while a lot of us are that way, when one pleases other people at the expense of ourselves, that can be a real issue and a challenge. And so I grew up feeling that I had low self-confidence, self-esteem, self-worth. And I really spent my life's mission trying to put myself back together in a very healthy way.
Yeah, and how did you do that? Like what worked for you to sort of heal that part of you?
I really did a tremendous amount of reading, metaphysical reading. I sought therapy. I sought groups where people could talk about their feelings, because in my family of origin, we didn't talk about feelings. And I think communication, just being open, is so important. So that was really very new for me. We didn't really talk about feelings and issues in our family. I did a tremendous amount of writing. As a writer, even as a little girl, I would always write my feelings down, and that seemed to really help.
Mm-hmm.
I did writing programs where I could be very introspective and look at and examine the pieces of my life in a very safe way through writing. That was also very helpful.
Yeah, that's what your book is like. It's really more like a memoir than a self-help book.
Yes, it's a memoir. That's right. And at the end of the book, I do provide exercises that I created for myself to help me through my journey, questions and answers to those kinds of issues that we have.
Well, it sounds like you're really naturally self-introspective.
I am.
You know, some people aren't, right?
That's right. But I really think we can be. And, you know, it's scary. I really understand that. For some people, it's very scary. It's easier to just kind of sweep things under the rug and keep going. But to be able to just say, okay, I'm going to deal with it now so I can live a full, wonderful, enriched life was always my goal. And I think it can be for anyone.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I mean, when I work with people in inner child work, it's sort of all kinds of childhood trauma. Like you had a really specific kind, but there's so many different kinds of childhood trauma that we can have. And I feel like taking the time to do like what you did and process that frees up, like unlocks this part of us that allows us to live in the moment at our full potential. It sounds like that's what you've done.
Absolutely. I've always said to myself, you know, in terms of feeling sorry for myself, sometimes I'll set a timer. Okay, I can be sorry for myself for about 10 minutes, and then I need to move on. And I think when we stop seeing ourselves as a victim in so many areas of our lives and that we have control to mold and change ourselves, it really is very empowering.
I love that. I think I love that. And I think I've worked with people who have really seen their childhood problems that as sort of like spiritual boot camp, and who have done a lot like what you've done, which is to take the pain and the trauma and turn it into their life purpose. You know, so here you are living a life purpose where you're helping other people, other replacement children, but also all kinds of people do this introspective work, do the inner work that they need to do to heal. So I don't know. What do you think? Could our childhood wounds be like spiritual boot camp?
I think that we all come with something, and it's our life lessons to be able to allow us to move on spiritually, whether it's through our childhood or maybe through the workplace or maybe through the people that we encounter that we fall in love with. There are lessons along the way, and I've always said to myself, you know, I want to learn the lessons because I don't want to have to keep coming back. So I want to be able to do what I can in this lifetime. And that's really been my focus. And I also really firmly believe that the statute of limitations of blaming our parents really runs out at 18. So from then on, we're really in charge of our own lives and what we can do to make them really enriched.
I love that. I think that's great. Yeah, and I think people become very disempowered if they go too much into blaming and complaining and victim. And you know, if the pity party is lasting for longer than 10 minutes, it's not a very empowering position.
Exactly. And I've also found that when I can focus on myself and my own needs, then I don't feel deprived. I'm not talking about being selfish. I'm talking about having self-care. And that when I feel deprived about something, that is the time when I will usually lash out and say, someone's not giving me what I need, when in reality, I'm not giving myself what I need.
Yeah, I think the same thing is true for me, that I think we always want that from outside of ourselves, like especially the child part of us wants to receive something from another person. And it's so sweet when we get that, it's like delicious, but we don't always get it. So we have to be able to do it ourselves, right?
Absolutely. And when we begin to think like, well, so-and-so will know what I'm thinking, and if he or she doesn't give me what I want, what's wrong with them? Well, no one can really know what we're thinking. And so I've come to realize that expectations are planned disappointments, and that I can't expect something from someone else. I can expect it from myself, and therefore I can give it to myself. And that's been a huge shift for me and a huge way of finding my peace within myself.
It sounds very empowering.
Yes, it is. I also have learned not to give advice unless I'm asked. And that has really been very helpful because when I give advice, I'm actually controlling someone else. And that's not okay. I need to just control myself. And that's been a huge shift in terms of just being able to be serene with my own life.
I found that challenging for me, I always have that intention, and it's challenging for me. And as my children are becoming adults, like my mother always did that. She always, I knew that she would never tell me what to do unless I asked her. And I love that she did that. I'm trying to do that for my kids, and I have to remind myself. I should put it on a post-it note. I have to
that
remind myself a lot.
That is a huge gift. I mean, the fact that your mother gave you that gift,
yeah.
Because I grew up with shoulds, everybody telling me what I should be doing and what I should be doing, and I kind of thought that that was the normal way, but that's not an empowering way to enable a child to have the wings to be able to fly away. So I've learned that on my own, but that's great. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, my mom, she's a family therapist, you know, really, really long time in the field. So she is pretty savvy. And, you know, I somewhere in my mid-20s realized, oh my God, she never tells me what to do. I always have to ask.
But that's great. So when you ask, you know, you really need the guidance.
Yep.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was good. So can you share some of your, some of the tips or the questions that you have people do at the end of your book?
Absolutely. So because I saw my book as a way in which of opening myself up and then examining the pieces and putting myself back together. So I have a chapter at the end with some of the questions. And questions would be, what do you want for yourself personally in terms of maybe a stronger self-esteem, self-confidence, self-worth. I mean, sometimes we really don't know exactly what we want and we're just kind of flailing. And I think asking a question like that can be really specific. What would an interaction between a friend, a family member look like if you had strong self-esteem? That was a question that I would ask myself, because if I didn't have it, I could pretend to have it and then I would be able to create that interaction.
Oh, I really like that.
And what would you do differently today if you had more self-confidence, and why? So asking questions that have what would you do if allows you to kind of pretend and act as if. And it's a very comfortable way to role play yourself into feeling better.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of your work was around building your self-esteem.
Yes, my self-esteem, my self-worth, my self-confidence, those were areas of my life that I think other people would not even think about. They'd say, oh, well, she does have a lot of self-confidence. But I was pretending. I knew that there was in my core that those things were lacking. Mm. And so there were people in my life who helped me, and in a sense, I kind of borrowed their self-esteem and their self-confidence until I could earn my own.
That's an interesting concept. I think that self-esteem, lacking self-esteem has a lot to do with people-pleasing, you know,
yes.
And it really is why we people-please, right? So
you're so right.
When we say no, you have to have really, really, really good self-esteem to say no.
You're right, because I remember in the earlier days when I would say no, I actually thought the earth was going to fall off its axis.
Right.
Somebody was not going to love me or like me, and that was very scary.
Yeah, it's totally scary. And I think, like, too, with a childhood wound like you have, the kind of fear that the child has feels life or death, you know?
Yes.
So when you're
yes.
a kid and your parents don't love you, like, it's like you actually can die, you know?
You're so right.
It goes into the nervous system, like it's this life or death thing.
You're so right. It's that black or white thinking, absolutely
yeah.
the extremes.
Yes.
Yes, when I was a good little girl, everything was wonderful and happy and bright and cheery and rainbows. And when I was a bad little girl, my mother would slam her door and I was in my room alone and it was scary. And there seemed to be no in between.
It makes me sad how terribly we do as a culture around helping people through grief, like especially if your mom's generation, maybe we're slightly better now, you know, there's been some improvement about it, but it's just awful.
You're right. I think, you know, today there are parent support groups, there is more acceptance of individual therapy and acknowledgement of giving people time and even being able to talk about it. But still, you're right. We're still very tentative in many of those areas. And so I feel very sad for my mother that she wasn't able to grieve or even talk about it. And we were not able to talk about my brother who died growing up either. We saw pictures around the house, but I intuitively knew that that was not something we could talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very grateful that you wrote your book and, sharing not only this concept of replacement child, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that fall into that category, but also giving this formula for sort of repairing your self-esteem. It's a really tough one. And I think it's quite debilitating to have bad self-esteem.
I think so too, but I think that it's very possible for anyone to work on it. And what I think for me, the most surprising positives from having people read my book is them saying that they could relate to it completely, even though they weren't replacement children, that they had areas of their lives where they felt not good enough. Maybe not in all areas, but at least in maybe in one area.
Yes, I would say that's true. Yeah.
So they could connect, and I was very surprised and happy about that.
So your book and your self-esteem building techniques are bigger than just people that have replacement child syndrome.
Absolutely. For I think anybody who's had issues feeling not good enough in at least one area of their lives, and it seems to be that many of us have had that. Maybe we've worked through it. Like you said, maybe it's from childhood, but it does carry with us. I think the only area in my life where I had a little bit stronger was in education, and that was because I think I was the only one in my family who pursued an education, and I kind of created that world just for me. But even then, I felt that I wasn't smart enough, and that was something I needed to work through.
Well, I can really feel in your energy when you're talking how solid your self-esteem is now, like, you know, how you like yourself, you approve of yourself. You feel confident sharing this really deep personal material about yourself in a memoir, which I think you sort of have to have good self-esteem to write a memoir, right?
Well, you know, you're so right about that. When I wrote it, I felt that it was my moral obligation to be able to share it with the world because I knew it would help others as it helped me to just write it and experience it. But I did have that moment of utter panic when I thought, oh my goodness, people are going to read this. And my husband said, yes, that's what happens when you write a book and you publish it. People do read it. And but I knew that that's what I needed to do. And people said, you know, it's very courageous of you. I didn't see it so much as courage, but I just thought it was a moral imperative to be able to share my journey because I feel that so many other people could connect to it.
And how would people get in touch with you? Can you share your website and
Absolutely.
How to find your book?
Yes, my website, I'll first say it and then I'll spell it, is barbaraannjaffe.com. BarbaraAnnJaff, as in Frank, F as in Frank, E.com. And my book is When Will I Be Good Enough? A Replacement Child Journey to Healing. So if you go onto my website, you'll learn about myself. You'll learn about my blogging. I also write for Psychology Today and InnerSelf.com. And through the website, you'll be able to have a link to be able to buy the book on Amazon or at least look into it and see if it fits for you.
Thank you. That's great. I'm sure people will want to, you know, read that. Anyone that's sort of looking for inspiration about how to feel better about themselves, I think would really benefit from your book. It's a really inspiring story.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
And thank you guys for being here with us today on A Power Radio. If you want to reach me, you can find me at my website, lisacampion.com. I hope you drop on by. And we will love to see you again here on Empower Radio. We're here saving the planet one person at a time.